Welcome to Series 5 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Red Setter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Red Setter. In this series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today. This week, I'm here with Ekaterina Solomina, co-founder of the Future London Academy. She started out agency side at Art Lebedev in Russia, which is the most prestigious and well-known design agency there, before becoming a junior designer at Lowen Partners in the UK, working on the likes of Johnson's Baby, Rexona, Stara Prahman and Stella Artois. She worked her way up to design director in-house at Mind Gym. She's also a visiting lecturer at the British Higher School of Art and Design. She then went on to start her own company and co-founded the Future London Academy, teaching experienced creatives, leadership, strategy, and other professional skills. Ekaterina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on. I love that your journey is a little bit different from design into teaching. And yeah, let's get stuck in. So at what age did you realise that you wanted to go into design, or it was a thing you could have as a career?
Brilliant question, because I believe they could be a career. Unfortunately, my parents didn't.
That's quite common.
Yeah, I didn't know a single designer in my life. That wasn't a thing when I was growing up. So The solid career was to become an engineer, which is what I studied. I was supposed to become a developer. I studied C and C++. And that's when I kind of figure out that there is such thing as web design. At that point, it was only appearing.
So when you were at school, did you do art and design and stuff like that, or was it?
Yeah, I suppose back then it was very different kind of art and design. We were doing like painting or whatever at school, but the cool creativity wasn't creative. The painting wasn't creative. It was like, paint this glass, and it is boring as in get.
That sounds familiar. Paint this bowl of fruit. That's still life type. Yeah,
very much so. So there was no creativity going on in the arts class. But my parents took me to this coding classes or something. It was the early days of not even web design. Back then we were doing a bit of web design, but also CDs. If you remember, we did this multimedia things on CDs and other weird things. So that's when I started coding, and I realized that you can obviously code anything that looks the way you want. Yeah. Could be a website, could be, and it was the old days of dial-up, so it was very slow. The graphic was very limited, but I personally believe that was the best time of web design, because you could do anything because it has never been done before. So there was no rules and you could experiment. So it felt very creative. And very soon I realized that I actually like the visual stuff much more than writing the code for a website. So the first actually paid job that I've done in design, which is quite hilarious, was when I was 14 years old.
Oh, wow. So you started coding when you were really quite young.
Yeah, and that was in this coding school that my parents took me together with my sister. Uh-huh. I think the teacher figured out that you can make these kids do commercial work.
Yeah.
So she got some toy company to basically, they needed a website. So she gave it to me, and to myself and my sister. And we basically built this website for this toy company. It's hilarious how, like, back then everything was different, and we were paid, so that would probably be £50 in the currency now.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of money. That was like beyond my imagination type of money. And it was the first time I was paid to do something I would do anyway for free. It was just so much fun. And that's the moment when I realized it could be a career.
Yes, definitely. That's a really good opportunity to have so young. So you were at high school, this is in Russia, at high school, and then continued doing the coding.
Yeah, so I went to maths and physics school. So after that, you go to university to do engineering. So that's where I went. Uh-huh. But I realized that design is something I like doing. So myself and my sister, we kept, now it would be called freelance, but we were just doing random thing on a computer, and for anyone who asked us to do anything, whether it was a friend, I don't know, we liked rollerblading, so the rollerblading community needed some sort of a website or a flyer, so we would design that, then something else. It was wherever we wanted to to do something creative, we would do it.
Yeah.
So by the time I went to university, I already had, I mean, portfolio. I wouldn't call it that.
But you had things to show.
Yeah, I had things to show. And basically, first day of university, I was already looking for a job. I was like, I need a proper job in design. The good things that helped me to get a job was that the industry was so young that my very rubbish portfolio was exactly the same as anyone who was much older than me, because the industry was just so young that I probably had something even more to offer. I had, whatever, 5 years of experience by then of working in design. So I got a job and I got a job as a designer in some tiny studio of two people. I was doing everything, a bit of coding, a bit of design, a bit of everything. The person who was running the studio very soon realized they could do anything from illustration. Whatever he asked me to do, I would do that.
So this is while you're at university supporting the time there. Such a good idea.
And I wasn't learning anything in university anyway, anything useful. So that was where I was actually learning things. But I was taking freelance on top of that. Whatever job I could find, I would go on the internet to find anyone looking for freelancers. I would knock on people's doors. I would do everything. Because at that point, I moved from my away from my parents. So I was born in a not very big city in the middle of nowhere. So I went to university in Moscow. So I was on my own. I didn't have any money. I needed literally like to support myself. And one job wasn't enough to sustain, and I wasn't paid very well. So I was basically trying to find anything. And I also love doing design. So for me, it wasn't even about doing job, is about cool projects. Yeah. So I had all sorts of random things, if I think about it now. Like I was working for some music channel at some point, and that for me was a dream job. And they were very happy that I could do anything in the middle of the night. They would send me like, hey, can you do this banner? We need to put it on the page. Or can you do this ad or something? And I was doing it as quick as possible, sending them straight away. And they were happy. I was happy. So yeah, I had like, probably like parallel careers throughout my life when I was doing like five jobs at a time, which is very handy to get a lot of experience. Yeah. Didn't have much sleep, but had a lot of experience.
I don't need as much sleep in those days. I didn't used to feel like I needed sleep when I was same age. But when did you decide that you actually wanted to do that? So how did you go from there to Studio Lebedev?
So it was a very funny story, because that was like the number one, like the pentagram in I don't know, in London. It's like the studio to work for. So the competition to get there was crazy. Every single designer who discovered that design is a thing wanted to work for that studio, and people who worked there, they were seen as like some sort of gods of design. If you work there, that's like cooler than anything you can imagine. But what was good about the studio, they're very democratic about how they were hiring people. There was not about your degrees or anything. Literally, you can do good work, you're in. So I was trying to get in there for many years since I started doing design.
Yeah.
At 14, I was sending them my portfolio as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so even that age, that's great.
And wasn't getting in, but eventually I did get in. And that was probably the best learning and education that I ever got, because I was literally sitting with the best designers, again, at that time.
Yeah.
And they were all very helpful. They were all there because we all love design. We genuinely love doing what we do. For us, there was no 9 to 5 or whatever. It was all about just doing as much design as possible and sharing how you've done. And you sit next to someone who's like, oh, how did you do that? Can you show me? And they're like, yeah, of course, because they're so proud that they did something that you didn't know. It was such a great environment where I learned so much, made so many friends, worked all sorts of crazy hours, but was the happiest probably ever.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. When did you decide to move to the UK? How did you leave?
That's a great question, because I always wanted to live in London, even though I didn't know why. I don't know. I liked Winnie the Pooh. Does that count?
That's the funniest reason to want to live in London.
I love everything about Winnie the Pooh. And then I realized actually Michael Wolff, who is an incredible designer, he's a fan of Winnie the Pooh as well. So we share the love of Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, Michael Wolff's amazing. Absolutely.
And so Winnie the Pooh or something else made me move to London. But it's not as easy. If you and any of your listeners are not in the UK, then you know how difficult it is to actually move to a different country, not just for financial reasons and finding a job and everything else, but also physically. You need a visa. You need actually a permission to be in this country. So that was a complicated thing. So I found a way, which was to go to this university in Russia that had a partnership with the University of Hertfordshire here. Uh-huh. And basically you could study for whatever, 3 years in Moscow and then transfer for the last year to Hertfordshire, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. And that's how I ended up in London. And then I found a job here and my career took off.
So did you have to study while you were here as well?
Yeah.
So you studied and worked at, or got the job at Lowe?
Basically, I, at any point in my career, I was doing always 2 degrees and having 2 jobs.
Okay.
So it was...
That's full on.
Yeah, I think I'm an intense person in general. So even now, I do a little bit too many things at the same time.
Yeah.
But I like it. I think that's like what makes me energized. So I had a job at Lowe when I was still studying in Moscow. And then when I moved to Hertfordshire, I got another job here in the UK. So it's... Yeah, it was a mixture of lots of different things happening at the same time. Everything happening, or is it? Everything everywhere happening at once. That's literally the description.
Yeah, absolutely. So you moved to London?
Yeah, and then from Hertfordshire, I moved to London, got a job here. And I had to start from scratch. I think that was probably the hardest for me personally, because when I got to this pinnacle of my career in Moscow, where I worked for the best company in the world, and after that, every company wanted to hire me. And again, I was still young, but I think I thought I made it. I knew everything. And then you move to London and no one cares about this Art Lebedev Studio, whatever the name is, because no one heard of it. So you're nobody with no job experience. And you're young.
Yeah.
And you still don't have money. You still have to figure out everything from scratch again.
You have to prove yourself again.
You have to prove yourself. And it's slightly discouraging, obviously, because you felt like you already made some progress and then you start from scratch. But I'm very grateful, actually, that I went on this journey. And it was especially difficult because your friends, your colleagues that you've met through your career so far in Moscow, they already doing very well. Some of them starting their own companies, some of their companies are doing well. So they are progressing. They are already art directors, creative directors, design directors. They have all these fancy job titles and you have nothing. You barely have a job. And then you find a job, which is far from being your dream job. It's just a design job, the only job you could find that could sponsor your visa, because I needed a visa as well to stay in the UK. So the company needed to sponsor me. So I needed to convince someone to actually not just give me a job, but also pay for the visa and sponsorship for me to stay in the country.
Yeah, okay.
So it wasn't the best company in the world. It was paying my bills and I was able to do design. And then eventually my career, I think, went better places and kind of caught up with my aspirations. So I moved to better companies.
What was the first one you moved to that you thought, yeah, this is good?
So there was a bit of an in-between period where I started freelancing, and that's when I met Michael Wolff.
Yeah.
The founder of Wolff Orleans,
the
branding guru, the legend, the everything in one. And because I was so eager to do any work and just do anything, I was helping him on just projects that he was doing with NB Studio. Basically, I got into NB Studio. I was just freelancing for them. And they introduced me to a few other people. I was like just doing odd things for lots of creative agencies, which was amazing, because working with Michael Wolff is probably the best experience you can dream of, because
yes,
he's such a wise, I think wise is probably the simplest but the best word to describe him, because how he thinks about life, creativity, design, work is just beyond anyone. And it doesn't matter how much experience you have, doesn't matter what age you are. He just has such an interesting perspective on everything that I keep admiring every time I have a conversation with him. Seriously, it blows my mind.
Oh, I've never met him in person. I'm hoping he'll come on the podcast at some point soon. We've talked on email about it, and
he has a book coming out.
That looks fantastic. I love, Envy have designed the whole thing, haven't they? And I think Alan and Nick have done an amazing job on that.
Yeah,
and it's coming out, it should be in a few weeks, shouldn't it?
Yeah, so, and Futureland Academy has been a supporter of the book, so there will be
a
wonderful mention of us as well.
Excellent.
So yes, Michael has been probably the most pivotal person in my career in terms of, you know how they in movies or something, they show there is like someone comes into your life and your life transforms. And that probably was Michael for me, because before Michael, I was just trying to survive and do everything and anything. Yeah. And then after Michael, I felt like, okay, I'm not insane. I do have some skills. I can do jobs. People can trust me. And the thing with the industry in the UK, unfortunately, it is word of mouth. Yeah. It is a fortunate and unfortunate thing. So if you do a good job for one company, they recommend you to their friends.
Yeah.
As well as, even if they don't, the fact that you have that on your CV, that means more people trust you.
Definitely.
But if you don't, getting the first job is the hardest. So that's why...
That's the thing, isn't it? Once you're in, you can build it, and it's you've got an element of control around the whole thing, because you can just go out and meet people.
Yeah.
Go to events and make it happen.
And NNB and Alan and Nick have been also so supportive throughout my whole journey that I could never thank them enough. Like, just being always so welcoming and so nice and helpful and really believing in me. So Michael and NNB Studio probably were the ones who helped me to actually start building a proper career in London. And then, so I worked with a few companies. Then eventually I joined MindGym.
Yeah, tell me about the difference between, so I've not spoken to many people who have worked in lots of agencies and really good branding agencies, but then switched to in-house. So
I feel like I've been very lucky that I never knew what's the right thing to do, because again, I grew up in a very weird environment. There was no design universities. There was no teacher who will tell me what you're supposed to do. I never met a single designer before I became a designer. So I never knew what's the right path or how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that was a blessing in disguise, because I never stuck to any particular path. So even from like the types of design I was doing, so the first job that I get was obviously web design, digital design, all of that. Then I moved to Lower, which is an advertising agency. I was a junior art director there. I was directing commercials.
Wow, okay.
So no one questioned whether I had any experience doing that.
You're throwing yourself in.
Yeah. So I learned a lot about advertising business, and again, I was obviously a junior art director, so there was a lot of how to support. I wasn't just thrown into that, and I was doing all sorts of other kind of things as part of it, but I was doing everything. And again, that's a blessing of the young design industry, where no one even, like, you can do that, go for it, do it. And I feel like actually that's happening now, and I would love to talk about that in a bit about how the industry actually going back to that place where you're supposed to actually do everything.
I think that's happening now as well. It's really interesting.
Yeah. So basically, my career was always non-linear. So I worked in advertising, and then I moved to branding. So from digital. Yeah. Now, if you tell someone that you move from like digital, whatever, product design to advertising and then to branding, everyone will be like, why?
Why? It's the same circle of things. But it never used to be. In lots of places, it's still very separate. But the really exciting companies I'm speaking to at the moment are starting to push it all together, which I love.
Exactly. And that's why when I actually joined MindGym, going back to being in-house, it all made sense to me, because I touched all the different parts of design before that.
Yeah.
So I was able to work with developers. I was able to work with graphic designers. Like, I was able to work with anyone, because I understood different parts. I understood how brands work. So it wasn't like anything strange for me. It just was very organic. And also, as part of that, so MindGym is an in-house team, but also they work with lots of clients.
Mm-hmm.
It's long to explain, but they have like external clients. And one of those clients was Versace. And that's another, probably the most pivotal part of my career, when I met Donatella Versace.
Wow.
So
Again, amazing person to meet.
Incredible person.
How did that happen? What, so let's suggest through working at Mind Gym and then...
So basically, yeah, at Mind Gym, Versace, it was rumored that they're becoming a client.
Yeah.
And someone needed to go to the client, to Milan, and present the ideas.
So is this basically Versace are thinking, how can we help the wellness of our employees and the mental health?
Yeah.
Mind Gym looks like something that could do that. So they'll commission you to sort of get involved.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, the details of the project are under NDA. So
of course,
I think basically what Versace was looking for and what, it doesn't matter, they were looking for
that's
for the support.
Idea.
Yeah. But what happened, and again, that's going back to being, I don't know, naive or confident, I'm not sure which one it is, but I've always been lucky to be myself.
Mm.
So I wear high heels, I dress in dresses, I love jewelry.
Yeah.
I'm not a traditional designer in the UK way. And I was actually shocked to find out when I went to University of Hertfordshire and everyone was wearing checkered shirts, jeans, and like trainers or sneakers. It was so bizarre. And I was like, you're supposed to be designers, like the most different and creative people. Why do you all dress the same? And that was always was bizarre for me. And that's actually how I found my best friend, because we were the only two looking weird in the whole room. And we like looked at each other and we're like, we'll be friends. But I love dressing up. I love bold colors. I like fashion.
Yeah.
And it's apparently not a thing in design, which is strange.
Really good point. Yeah, I've never really thought of that. So, yes.
And I would wear high heels every day to the office. And lots of people thought it was strange, but I loved it, so I didn't care.
Yeah, go for it. Absolutely.
And then so when the Versace project came about, I think that was very logical. So the person who should fly to Milan...
Yes.
Would be me. I mean, I actually don't know why they picked me. I hope I was doing great work as well. But I think it just matched the brand. And that was probably the most incredible experience for me. So I didn't know. I didn't think Donatella will be there. Like, you fly to meet a client, you never meet like a founder or CEO or anyone. You just meet a team. And it was... like as dreamy as you can imagine. The Versace.
She was in the first meeting. She was.
So yeah, the Versace sent the car for me from the airport. You go, you like, then you go to a meeting in the Versace mansion, and
wow.
It's original one where Gianni lived, and it has all sort of mosaics and Versace everywhere. So you go in and you just want to pinch yourself that like, this is really happening. I can't believe. And then we had like the full day of like all sorts of meetings with other people. But they said like, Donatella will be coming for the final presentation after all of your brainstorms. And we need to prepare the room. Oh, by the way, the dress code was black and gold.
There was a dress code for the meetings.
I don't know if they were serious about it. They said it. I don't know how strict it was if we showed up in something else. But I don't know.
Would you have been kicked out? That's
seriously, don't know. But
I've never heard that before. It's brilliant.
But we all wore black and gold. And then she showed up for the meeting. And we were sitting around this round table where, because it was the sales team there, it was like our production team, like there were different teams around the table. And each of them were presenting the different part of the project, what they're planning to do. And I was, I think, the last one or something. And so it was going one by one, presented to Nutella. And she is like a queen. In her presence, everyone is different. Like her employees, like there is so much respect and admiration for her internally.
Mm.
And that's what, actually, she's one of the people who inspires me the most in terms of being a woman in such a difficult industry, which is fashion, and being so successful and being herself. She's just incredible. So anyway, so the presentation going on, and I feel like now it will be my turn. And I'm like, please don't mess it up. Like, this is probably the most important.
The pressure.
Yeah, whatever. Time in your life. And so I was so nervous. I remember my heart was just beating as hard as it could. And I was so afraid that all this nervousness would just make me break down. Because I'm good at presenting. I can present.
Yeah.
But I was like, if I mess it up now, I won't forgive myself. So anyway, my turn comes and I present the vision for what the design should be and how it will go and all the brand and everything. And I sit down and she says, I like her. and she said something nice about the presentation. And I had to catch the flight. So literally I had to run out of the meeting, say goodbye to everyone because I had a flight that literally in an hour.
But you knew she liked you and you knew she liked the
So design. I get in a car with the person who was like a client side, so who was dealing with her before this meeting. And he was like, do you understand what, like, that she said is a big deal? I'm like, I don't know, was it? Like, she never says, I like someone. Like,
wow,
it's like as big as a compliment as you can get. So I was just blown away. And then we started working on a project and she turned out to be the warmest, loveliest, just most human person. And again, she is herself all the time. And for me, that's probably was, again, this big transformation where I realized that to be successful, you don't need to be someone else. You can be yourself.
Yes.
Because she dresses up in heels. She's very empathic. She's very energetic. She's spontaneous. She's creative. She's inspiring. She can run in the room because she has so many ideas and is like want to show them to someone. She's very playful. She's very generous with her time and creativity. And literally was the first person that I met who was like that, that was creative, but was a woman, was herself, was wearing high heels and loved fashion and all of that. So, and when we worked together, it was hilarious because we filmed a lot of videos there. And sometimes I had to be her double because they would like need to set the light for everything. And then they would send her the video of saying like, are you happy with how it's set up? And she would make jokes like can she be in the video? Can we be in the video together? It's hilarious. She is, she's probably the biggest inspiration that I've had in my career to see what's possible. And she, she's incredible.
Oh, what an inspiration. So that was the Mind Gym. Is she involved in the Future London Academy at all now?
We hope one day. I'm still in touch with the team. I really hope. She's incredible at what she does beyond her day job. She supports lots of causes. She's passionate about so many things.
Yeah.
And she finds time to do these things, which is, I mean...
That's great.
So one day, I hope she'll come to teach at Futureland Academy. For now, we do have Michael Wolf, who teaches at Futureland Academy. We do have lots of other incredible founders, partners at Pentagram, Harry Pierce, Marina Wheeler, Yuri Suzuki, they all taught at Futureland Academy. So we have incredible, incredible creatives and legends of design who teach with us, which is...
So tell me about being at Mind Gym. Was it when you were at Mind Gym, you had this idea for Future London Academy?
So as mentioned before, I always do things at two things at once.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can't just have one. I don't know why.
I saw it overlaps a bit when I was looking into your sort of history.
But... Yeah, so all things literally overlap in my life. So I actually started Future Land Academy just before I joined Mind Gym because it was something that we were just curious about. I at that point already knew lots of people. I knew Michael Wolf. I knew lots of creative agencies and I loved learning from them. And I thought it would be fun for other people to learn because I couldn't find any content when you are senior creative that is helpful and useful and inspiring. So I thought it would be a lot of fun to create something that would be like this experience where you go to different agencies and meet their founders, creative teams and learn from them.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was sharing this idea with my now co-founder, Mo. We used to work together in one of the agencies, a few agencies ago. Mm-hmm. And he was on the business side and I was on the creative side. So it was always good to bounce ideas with him because he would think of them in a very different way. Mm. And he was like, oh, that's a great idea. Do you want to do it as a business? And I was like, I just wanted to do it for fun, for free. Like, I like doing it. This is what I do anyway. And he's like, no. Like, look, if you do it as a business, then you can spend more time on it and actually have a team that will help you. It will be a better product.
Yeah, people can actually search out help and find you rather than it just being people you know. Yeah,
exactly.
Definitely.
So I was like, okay. He's like, I'll help you. I was like, okay, let's do it. So never planned what it will be. It was just a fun thing to do. And at that point, I was offered a job at Mind Gym. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll do Mind Gym. And this, I basically spend all my weekends and evenings and any holidays that I had building Futureland Academy. And I remember the interview when they were interviewing me at Mind Gym, they were like, you have this thing on the side. Are you sure it's not going to conflict with your day job? And I still remember I said, well, normal people have to 6 p.m. go to a pub. I don't like pubs. I like doing work. And I remember the CEO of the company thought it was hilarious. And he's like, okay, it's fine. Yeah. But it was true. I don't like pubs. I like doing cool stuff. So
yeah, choose how you spend your time. That's a good way to do it.
So it never interfered with Mind Gym. I always found time. And actually, I brought a lot of designers to Futureland Academy. So people who were in my team, they joined a few of the programs because they wanted to learn. So I was like, yeah, of course, come and learn. So it benefited both sides very well. And then Futureland Academy started growing. So at some point, I needed to make a decision whether I'm taking like this thing to the next level or am I continuing with my kind of career in design. And it felt like the right time, and I quit Mind Gym to do Futureland Academy full time, which at that point felt very scary, but I kind of calculated I can support myself enough just like for food and I don't know.
Yeah, you can get by.
And I thought that was enough to figure out, but then it started growing and
I know we've touched on the sort of premise of the whole thing of giving professional development to senior creatives. But tell me how it works and what you actually do.
So we call ourselves an executive school for creatives. Uh-huh. So essentially we do courses, events online and offline for senior creative professionals. It could be creative directors, heads of design, heads of UX, heads of innovation. So people who are already very good at what they do, but they're curious, they're passionate, they want to learn more. And we create courses on leadership, on strategy, on business skills. We have our crown jewel, which is our Design Leaders Program, which is like an MBA equivalent, which is a year long. And it's basically teaches all sorts of things about business strategy, sales, legal operations, and all the other subjects that as creatives we are never taught ever. And then we start our companies and then we're like, okay, now I think it's the time to know P&Ls and other things.
Yeah, it's really important.
So that's how we created the program where we have CFO of WPP, we have CEOs of biggest branding agencies teaching, like a CEO of Super Union taught at our program. We have coaches and leadership talent and legends of design.
Wow.
We have founder of Dishoom, Shamil Takar, who is also teaches in the program. So we have incredible people who share how they do things, and it's very practical and very, very future focused.
Yeah, but very needed. There's not much else like that out there. Literally,
there is no other program that is created for people who work in the creative industry and have 15 plus years of experience. So this is the only program in the world that's specifically created for that senior audience and has that many. We have 100 plus experts teaching on the program. And they're all, it's not a visiting guest lecturer who just shows up, says hi, and kind of says bye. We develop content and sessions with them to make sure they're practical, that they help actual people to grow their careers or grow their businesses.
That's really great. The impact you must have had on other agencies and other people starting agencies and general creativity is really exciting.
Yeah. And my belief is that should be more creatives at senior positions. There should be more founders who are creatives. There should be more chief creative officers and chief design officers in the world. Because if we have more creatives at those positions, the companies will make better decisions. They won't be just based on P&L and finance and all these boring things, but actually would be based on solving problems through imagination, through creativity, through empathy, which will mean we'll have better products and services in the world.
Yeah, it's a hugely important part of the mix that makes people's lives better.
Exactly. Yeah. So we focus a lot on the planet overall and what as creatives we bring to this world from ethics perspective, from sustainability perspective, from culture perspective, how we are affecting cultures around the world as creatives. So it has been an incredible journey, and the people who've been through the program build fantastic companies grew their companies to next levels, got partnerships in the companies that they worked in. So they got all sorts of career progression.
Brilliant.
So it has been fun.
That sounds really, really good. It's so can I ask you about your own creativity? Do you have anything specific that you do to inspire yourself?
Yes, that is very important, because that's what Michael Wolff actually says a lot about the importance of curiosity, that curiosity is a muscle and you need to constantly train it. And trust me, Michael, when he's 90 years old, he is the most curious person you'll ever meet, who just can't stop being curious about everything. And he's seen a lot.
Yeah.
And still he would sit at the table and look, is like, oh, that's a very interesting texture. How the light goes through the window is very, I've never seen anything like that before. He said something, every time I leave the house, I see things I've never seen before. And it's so incredible.
Yeah.
And it's so easy the older you get to forget.
Absolutely.
That discovery and curiosity and just creativity that surrounds you.
I love that.
One is just being curious. So
yeah.
Being curious about everything, talking to people, going places you've never been to, doing things you've never done.
Yeah.
Talking about things you've never done. I started a few years back. I did this 30 hobbies project when I decided to try 30 new things in 30 weeks. So basically every week,
wow,
I would try a new thing that I've never tried before.
Like what? What did you do?
So the criteria was, it has to be something I've never done before.
Uh-huh.
It has to, I can't say no.
Okay.
So it can't be like, oh, I'm not sure I like it. And it can't be on Zoom. So these were the three criteria. And
yeah,
then people were throwing all sorts of things at me. So I tried all musical instruments, from drums to saxophone to guitar. I done all sorts of floating therapy, tarot reading, Reiki, healing. And then I think the coolest thing that actually I've done was helicopter lessons. So I I started learning how to drive a helicopter.
In a real helicopter?
A real.
My God, that sounds really exciting and slightly scary.
It was a scary, even though, so my dad is a pilot, so I have a bit of a flying gene in me. So I always love flying. I loved everything about flying. And I always wanted to try to drive a helicopter. And you first do like this ground school where you learn too much information. And then they do the briefing, how everything can go wrong. And then you get really scared, because basically they need to tell you, if this, then definitely don't do this. And if this, then you crash. And if this, and then you hear every ways you can crash before,
oh my gosh,
before getting in the helicopter. And then we went in, and basically the helicopter has basically two controls.
Yeah.
So there is a pilot with you, and you have your own control, and the pilot has control. So the obviously to take off and everything else, the pilot does it. And then at some point they say like, okay, now you take the control. And obviously in the first lesson, you don't do much. Like, you don't know much, and they won't trust you to do much, because it's very easy to crash a helicopter.
I can imagine.
So, but even just keeping it still is the scariest thing. So it's very gentle. So even a tiny tilt can really feel. And then you think of your safety briefing that say, if you tilt it that way, you crash, don't do this. And you're like, I just don't want to crash. I don't want to crash. And you obviously up in the sky, and I'm not afraid of height, but by the way, a helicopter doesn't have the doors either. So you're like literally looking outside. It's the most bizarre experience.
Yeah.
It was the best time of my life. Seriously, I was the happiest. It was probably the closest to flying. In a plane, I don't feel like you feel like you're flying.
Yeah, but I've flown little planes before.
It's like you float.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's a helicopter, I imagine, would be a totally different experience.
Because you physically, like, you feel like you're floating. You're kind of constantly a little bit up and down.
Yeah.
And it's a strange feeling to be in the air, and especially with no doors. So you kind of see everything underneath you, and you control where you go. It's very strange. I loved it. But going back to inspiration, 30 hobbies. If anyone currently listening is stuck or bored or feel like they don't know what they like doing or where they should go, try 30 things. You will discover so much about yourself, about how you learn, what you like, what you don't like, because we very quickly start start being very judgy about things that we like. It's like, I'm not going to go to this, whatever, party, cafe, street, whatever, because it's not my thing. And you really never know. And with hobbies, we very quickly stop doing things that we're like, no, I'm not really a musical person. I'm not going to, I'm not this, I'm not
that. Yeah.
And then when you force yourself doing things and you promise yourself, I'm going to do one lesson. And if I hate it,
that's
only
it.
One.
Yeah.
You don't need to go back. And it's kind of reassuring. So one of the most transformational for me was singing. Because I'm not a singer. I can't sing at all. No talent there. And it was the most painful experience where I cried a lot. It was...
Yeah, it can be really emotional. That sort of, you're bearing your inner soul, really, aren't you, when you're singing? That sort of, yeah.
Exactly. And you feel like a failure. And it's very important, I feel like, especially the more experience you get, but to be honest, at any age, you need to be grounded and know that you are very bad at many things in life. And even if you get out one, you're still bad at lots of other things. It's very grounding feeling. And then you feel like you can progress as well. Even things that you're really bad at, slowly and painfully, you can progress. And that's a reassuring feeling.
Definitely. I really like that. That's a very good way of inspiring yourself. Can I ask you on a different subject about the design industry? Do you feel part of it? Do you feel, I imagine you feel right at the center of it. What challenges do you have in it?
I love that you ask, do I feel part of it? Because that's a great question. I will be very honest. When I started running a company, at first I was doing all the design myself, so I did feel like a designer. As soon as we started hiring a design team and I was doing less and less design, I did have an identity crisis of like, am I even a designer or a creative if I'm not doing the design?
Yeah.
I'm still in charge of the brand. I'm still work with the team, but they're incredible. Our creative team is the most talented team and they inspire me every day.
Yeah.
So I'm not doing design. So am I a designer? And then I realized that creativity is a broad term and running a company and especially a creative company is a creative process. You constantly need to think about so many things from your brand to your strategy to everything else, which is a very creative thing if you approach it creatively. So am I a designer? I don't know. Am I creative? 100% yes. Do I feel like part of creative industry? Yes, because we work with the creative industry, for creative industry, in creative industry, and with creative industry. So definitely feel like of literally course. In the center of it.
Yeah.
In terms of what I see in the creative industry as like challenges, I would say any challenge is always an opportunity. And I feel like right now is very exciting time for creative industry because it's going through this turbulence. When I was graduating, it was recession and that was fantastic because, again, that gave opportunities for so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is another recession. We don't know if it's beginning, end, middle, what it is. But it's actually exciting because I can see so many new things emerging already from actually young people. And that's why I love the podcast that you're doing that inspires young people to do things. This is so important.
It is really important. Thank you.
For whoever is now at school, maybe 14 years old, maybe 19, 20.
Yeah.
I feel like now is your time. You have probably the best opportunities right now to do something completely different than no one ever seen before.
Mm.
For two reasons. One, you have time and energy that more established companies, founders, creatives don't have. Your energy goes down with life a lot of the times.
Yeah.
Unless you're Michael Wolff, whose energy only keeps going up. But your time also goes down because you get other interests and other things in your life. When you're young, you are full of energy. Everything is exciting to you. And you should be aware of this power, that it is a superpower that you have.
Yeah, right. I don't think I ever really realized that when I was young in that sort of way.
Exactly. And you should use it in the ways to experiment what you want to do, doing different things. You have nothing to lose, only things to gain. Learn things, try different things, fail at things. And what I've seen happening right now, the new types of creative agencies are being built by the younger generation. So first of all, they're much more interesting in terms of the talent. Diverse probably would be the most boring word to describe it, but they are diverse, and not just from the, I suppose, age, gender, and like any other perspective, but from the talent perspective.
Yeah. Diverse as a word might sound boring, but when you meet a diverse creative team, what comes out of it is
exactly
really special.
And diversity, so I think young people at any generation, but specifically with this generation where I see, they don't see any kind of skills as an assets necessarily, because we all know everything can be learned so quickly nowadays, as well as everything you learn becomes outdated very quickly. So in that sense, skills are not an asset anymore. So what is? So they build these teams of really multifaceted people, not necessarily coming from any specific skill or education, but just from variety of interests and curiosities.
Interesting.
And those people build something really new, something you haven't seen before. Because whether you're building a branding agency or digital agency, or like if you just repeat what people have done before you, you're competing with 25 years of experience or 30 or 40, who knows. But if you just go sideways and do something very difficult and different, it will be difficult first. People will think that you're crazy. People will think that it doesn't work. A lot of older and more senior people will tell you that that's a crazy and not so good idea.
Yeah.
But if you genuinely believe in it, and that's where your curiosity lies and that's where your passion lies, very quickly would get traction. And cooler brands will start approaching you because they're like, oh, what is this cool, shiny thing you're doing no one else is doing and looks different than everyone else's? Can we have a bit of that? You will find that your own audience obviously is more drawn to this than whatever the older generation is doing, because you actually understand what's interesting. Because if it's interesting to you and you're young, it must be interesting to other young people. So that is an incredible superpower. And I am so excited about what younger generation is building.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask you finally for tips for juniors starting out today?
I just actually came back from a career fair last week where lots of designers were looking for a job. I think I saw 60 designers in that day, which was a lot. Uh-huh. I actually got a glimpse into what the job market looks like, what people are doing. So they were all fresh graduates from universities. The good thing is that I saw people are so talented in so many different ways. So the projects that they showed me are not the projects that I've been doing when I was young. They're not the projects I've seen before.
Cool.
And it's really cool. It's really inspiring just to see random things.
Yeah.
So advice number one, don't listen to your professors if they say you need to be a certain type of person, a certain type of design, or do a certain thing.
Yeah.
If your creativity goes wild ways, go for it. That is actually so much more interesting to see than another logo, website, app, whatever.
Completely agree.
So do your fun, weird projects. I saw someone doing some 3D of stale food that was float. It was a game that was, you needed to, it was food waste game in your fridge where you would do something with like rotten food. I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah.
It was so cool. Just really random things. And some personal projects, some things that you don't even know where to place them. Like they're just things. So do random things.
I've spoken to so many people who've said that they nearly left the whole industry because professors at the design school told them that they were getting the creativity wrong. And obviously not all professors are like this, and there's many, many amazing people, but the one that does will stick, isn't it? But see through that.
And the last piece of advice, that's something that definitely I noticed when I was interviewing all these graduates, is one, show the energy and the willingness to do anything. And that doesn't mean working long hours. It doesn't mean compromising your everything and all the other passions that you have. What it means is you're genuinely curious and interested in what you're doing.
Yeah.
So show that you want to do any type of design. Show that you're curious about so many things. Show the energy, because that's what people are looking for when they're hiring. They're looking for someone fresh, energetic, someone who wants to do things, who has these curiosities that are outside of everyone's day-to-day life. So show the energy, show the passion and willingness to do lots of different things and experiment, because that's what is your superpower.
Yeah.
You don't have experience, you don't have anything else, but you do have energy. And from there, you can build a great career and great portfolio.
That sounds like very good advice. Oh, Ekaterina, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much. And I really enjoyed it. I hope that it's helpful for the young audience and not confusing. But if anyone need any help, I always love doing anything I could do for the creative industry. Feel free to find me on LinkedIn's of the world, Instagram's of the world.
That's really great.
So anything that you feel like was helpful, let me know. I also love hearing what kind of things people found insightful.
Yeah.
I generally so curious about the younger generation that is building incredible things that sometimes I think they're like these aliens that are like came from a different planet and doing really cool things, but I sometimes don't understand what they are. So I really appreciate when people reach out and say what's helpful from my side and not, because that gives me a bit of a glimpse in their life as well. So dear aliens, if anyone is listening, please come and say hi and let me know if any of it was helpful.
That sounds very good.